Welcome back to The Wine Show on Inner FM 96.5. That was Pass the Wine, Sophia Loren by The Rolling Stones in their absolute golden period. And very happy to play that song. Mm. It's not often, Gary, I get a fully functioning qualified winemaker sitting over me.
Oh,
so
I'm qualified. God, forget that.
So. I'm sure honorary degree coming soon, 16 years.
Time spent in lieu, yeah.
Hey, I'm just going to grill you on some stuff that I'm fascinated about. One of your, would it be fair to say one of your benchmark kind of styles is the Skin's Contact? The whole bunch with the Syrah?
Yeah, sort of. We're not reinventing the wheel when we use whole bunches, but I adopted the whole bunch style based on sort of my experiences in California.
Yeah.
And then brought that back with me. When I was getting into wine, I was very fortunate that I was working in a wine bar in London, and they were bringing in some really interesting wines, and I came to it with a palate from drinking cheap beer and crap wine, from university days.
Yeah.
Not like I said, I don't have a wine degree. I have a degree in literature, so which involved a lot of drinking.
Yeah.
And then, some of these wines that were being presented, excuse me, were like, old school Loire wines and old Northern Rhone wines. And I sort of found myself being drawn to the wines I like the most all seem to have a whole bunch in them. And I was like, there's something going on here. You know, it's very old school, rustic sort of style. And then I came back here and I thought, well, what happens if you get a whole lot of Yarra Valley Syrah and add a whole lot of whole bunches? And there were some mistakes on the way that went down the drain. There's some, and then finally, I think it's more like I've just sort of ended up finding the vineyards that are more in tune with being used as whole bunches. It's not about the whole bunches per se. I just sort of gravitate towards those vineyards. I chase granite. I love granite soils.
Yeah.
And granite and whole bunches and Syrah have a sort of very good mutual affinity. Yeah.
That's a lot of the Northern Rhone, isn't it?
Granite pretty much
soils.
And you can get that. Like, I have a wonderful Beechworth vineyard that I work with, and that's very high elevation, deep granite soils, and it works wonderfully with whole bunches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At its core, what is whole bunch?
Whole bunch is the prevailing wisdom in modern winemaking would say that you separate the berries from the stem.
Yeah.
So, but what's happening, obviously pre-industrial, a long, long time ago, and probably, as we were speaking about Georgian wine, no one really had the capacity in a large volume of wine to remove every single berry from every stem and then discard the stems. When we do that, we compost the stems and return to the vineyard, but what would happen if you're doing everything by hand, you would just throw the whole lot in together or a certain high proportion in together.
Yeah.
And they ferment. And then it's not necessarily, what I've sort of discovered along the way is that it's not necessarily about the bunch inclusion. That ironically and sort of counterintuitively, the more bunches that you add to the ferment, the less stemmy it tastes, if you understand. So
okay, no, but yeah, carry on. We'll get there.
Yeah, so if you imagine that, if you threw 50% of whole bunches in, that would mean you de-stem 50% of the remaining fruit,
yep.
Which then ends up as a pulpy, juicy must, as we call it at that stage. That then is a lot of liquid surrounding a lot of stems. And then once the ferment begins to happen and that juice gradually turns into alcohol, that alcohol becomes a solvent, and that solvent will then start leaching out all those stem-like flavors. So you get a lot of bitter greens, a lot of the bittering tannins and the sort of phenolics, which can be quite unpleasant, but in some cases actually can be quite good, depending on the kind of wine that you have. But what happens if you have, say, an 80% or 100%, 90% whole bunch wine? You don't have that sluice of solvent to extract all of those flavors from the stem. So conversely, you 100% whole bunch wine tastes less stemmy than a 50% whole bunch wine, if you get my drift.
That makes sense to me now. And so what you're doing is essentially
picking grapes by hand into small tubs if we can. Generally they come in half-ton bins, but if the vineyard's close enough, we'll pick them into small sort of 20-kilo crates and hand-tip them into a tank. So you're trying just to maintain bunch integrity and berry integrity,
not crushing them.
The berries, yeah.
And how does fermentation take place in a...
Naturally. Yep. So one of the things that I love about whole bunches is that it kind of forces you into a methodology that is by nature natural. Natural in the sense that we speak about it in the industry at the moment, but minimal intervention. If you want to add things to it, you really can't, because you don't have a lot of juice and a lot of sort of liquid to work with. So you can't add a lot of sulfur, because all you're doing, PMS, as we add sulfur as a natural preservative, sometimes we use it to encourage a natural wild yeast in, you know, indigenous yeast ferment. But you can't actually add that much, because if you added the regular amount, so if you were, getting a little bit scientific here, but if you add 25 milligrams per litre sulfur dioxide as potassium metal bisulfate to a ferment, based on the fact that it's a 2-ton ferment, you're basically adding that whole 2 tons worth of PMS to a very small amount of juice, which you just bleach and kill.
Yeah.
So you can't do that. So you, by virtue of the methodology, you're adding a small amount of sulfur. You really don't have anything you can add acid to. There's nothing to mix the acid into, you know. So there's really nothing you can do but sit back, wait. The only thing, the thing we utilize most during harvest with a whole bunch of ferments is carbon dioxide as dry ice.
Yeah. So what does that do?
That just keeps all the oxygen away and keeps all the nasties. So hopefully it keeps the unwanted microbiological activity at bay.
Yeah. What's a prerequisite for doing whole bunch?
Very clean fruit. Very good, clean, balanced, grown fruit with very high natural acidity. They're the keys.
Yeah. And what about these stems themselves? You know, do they need to be fully ripe and...
No, well, I used to think that, and I think originally, and a lot of the people have fallen into the trap of thinking that you need to ripen up and what we call lignify, so when the stems actually become a little bit woody.
Yeah.
I've totally gone against that now. Like, nowadays, I look at a vineyard and go, look, if the fruit's ripe, then the stems are ripe enough.
Yeah.
If you hung around waiting for the stems to ripen up to a certain amount, then you've overcooked the fruit.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, one of the, like my Yarra Valley vineyard up in Wandon, when we harvest the Syrah from there, the stems are iridescent green, fluorescent green.
Yeah.
But very quickly they just turn. So. Yeah.
And you wouldn't go munching on them. They'd be pretty sour and
savvy. Yeah, stems are not a pleasant thing to eat, no.
And so you've got the grapes, you've got the whole bunches, you're sort of up over 80% in the fermenter. What's the next process?
The next thing that happens, and we're about to go down the rabbit hole of wine geekdom, is carbonic maceration.
Yeah.
That, like I said, I mean, nowadays I've worked out that I don't... What I'm doing effectively is nothing really to do with the stems. It's about the carbonic maceration, which is the proper scientific name is intracellular fermentation. So, like I said, we're going to get real geeky here. So,
CabMac works for me.
So CabMac, what it is in a nutshell, it's the anaerobic fermentation of the sugars inside the berry. So anaerobic means in the absence of oxygen, whereas a normal yeast fermentation, which is alcohol, sugar to alcohol, producing carbon dioxide and heat, that's normally in the presence of oxygen. That helps the yeast go along. What happens with CabMac is that you get a much different range of flavors. You initially get like a microbiological degradation of acids, so you get a lot less acid.
Yep.
You get a lot softer acids. And then you also get, and this is what you see most in CabMac wines, is you get a couple of compounds that are produced. One is cinnamate, and I can't remember the other one. It's more like the Kirsch raspberry flavor.
Okay.
Anyway, so you get a lot more cinnamon spicy characters, and then you get a lot more of that Kirsch raspberry cherry flavor coming through too. And this is, you know, a legitimate complaint for a lot of people who say don't like the CabMac or have a bit of an issue with CabMac style wines, is that you can make everything look a bit same.
Yeah.
Early on.
Yeah.
But that's early on, because what happens is that the carbonic maceration fermentation, it really only takes about 2 weeks to complete. And after those 2 weeks, you either have a choice to press it out and you have a CabMac wine.
Yeah.
And I do that sometimes with certain varieties and certain cuvées. But then what you do with, say, the single vineyard Syrahs is you leave them for a further 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Sometimes I've left them up to a month on skins. And that's when normal, straightforward Saccharomyces cerevisiae aerobic fermentation will complete the ferment.
Yeah.
So normal fermentation.
And so... at what point do you separate, like free the juice from the...
Free the juice. The juice wants to be free.
Yeah, and...
Well, that's based on taste. So it's all about tannin management. My sort of mantra in the winery is always to do as little as possible or as little as required. I remember I was very fortunate to work with Paul Draper at Ridge Vineyards in California.
Yeah.
And he instilled in me and everybody who was working there that the hardest thing to do in a winery is nothing.
Yes.
There's always a tendency to want to pick and tiddle with something and fiddle with this and correct something. So what we try to do is just sort of pick that point at the optimum point of flavor and tannin profile, and then press that off. So dig it out, as Rob was saying before, dig it out by hand, whole bunch. you haven't lived if you haven't dug out a 100% whole bunch ferment that's been on skins for a month. It's like concrete. So really, it's backbreaking work.
So I have a slightly related question. When we were talking about that, I said I sort of shoveled out a 5-ton fermenter of Pinot skins. It wasn't a whole bunch, but there were whole berries in there.
Yeah, beautiful.
That was the only reward I had that whole day.
So delicious,
aren't it the same with Syrah? Just that burst of CO2 and sweet. And
I always said if you could market that, if you could capture that in like a chocolate or a candy, you'd be making millions, I reckon. So
I tried to do that once.
Oh, really?
I tried to time a trip to see Rob Hall when he was working at Kellybrook with the Pinot ferment, so we could actually have that as a dessert.
Oh, it's amazing! Yeah,
just
that's cool.
Timing didn't work out, but
yeah, it does. It is one of the great. I mean, as winemakers and vineyard workers, you end up with pretty bad acid guts because you just want to keep eating grapes because they taste so good. But you know, you just add acid, or you pretty much vintage. You survive on coffee, bread, and eating grapes.
Yeah,
and then beer.
Beer. That sounds like, all the vital ingredients.
The three basic necessities of life, yeah.
And then, so we've freed them all, which is running them to barrel, and then it's kind of winemaking is normal, or is it?
Yeah, the thing is Rob was mentioning about logistics and sort of the difficulties with climate change and having enough tank space, because when you press out a ferment, especially a whole bunch ferment, you're then squeezing out a whole lot of sugar because the ferment will not complete to dryness in a very high whole bunch ferment. So what I'll do is dry it out in tank, because when you add it to barrel, that's when you're most at risk of getting some microbiological taint. Well, not most at risk, actually. These days I also think that it's very much vineyard. You know, things like Brettanomyces are very much vineyard derived. So if you have a good, clean, healthy, balanced vineyard, then you're going to have no issues at all. But I don't like putting sweet wines to barrel. So I dry the wines, the ferment out in tank. And as soon as it's sugar dry, it goes to barrel for secondary fermentation or malolactic fermentation.
Yeah.
And then, like in jamshed wines, oak is never an influence. So I use old oak and large format oak. I don't use any new oak on any of the top cuvées.
Yeah.
Conversely, the brand new oak goes onto the cheaper wines because they look better with it. But I always find that I'm not really a fan of oak flavour per se, but it's actually the oak tannins that bug me with new oak wines.
Okay. Explain that.
Oh, well, barrel. So when you have a brand new barrel, it's, it comes from oak and it's been fired. It's been aged outdoors. The oak has the stage, and then it's been fired to whatever, level you want, medium toast. We call it toasting level, so medium toast, heavy toast, so darker, lighter or darker toast. What happens if you a brand new barrel that hasn't had any liquid in it before? If you put a whole lot of wine in there, you're then extracting wood tannins, so the cellulose tannins itself come out, and that can be a component to a wine, but I prefer to have all the tannins from the skins and the stems rather than. There's enough tannin, believe me, in 100% whole bunch wine, there's enough tannin. You don't want to go adding any more tannins. They're generally quite tannic beasts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sturdy wines.
That's fantastic. And so people can obviously buy your wines. So have you got you got wine to sell at the moment?
There's some left. Yeah.
Yep.
There's always wine. Yeah.
So there's the single vineyard stuff from the jamshed range.
Mm-hmm.
And
you also have a level called the Harem series, which is, that was one of the, I started that in 2008. So that was always more like a table wine, bistro style, easy drinking, early drinking wine.
Yeah. Yeah, and the La Syrah that you make is...
That's a Harem wine, yeah.
Yeah, a few customers think that's an absolute just favourite. You know, it's good value, bags of flavour.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, generous. I always like to pride, I always like to think, and I always hope that the Jamshed Harem range provides a really high level of drinkability. You know, you can have an interesting wine, but make it drinkable at the same time, so...
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Gary.
And then there's also the third line, which is the fun. I call them the park wines. So a couple of Petnats, a couple of experimental batches, experimental varieties. Sagrantino, Pinot Gris coming out.
Yeah, I saw the Sagrantino, and was it the rosé you have coming out as one of the rewards?
Yeah, Sagrantino rosé. Yeah. So we just bled a little bit off.
Yeah.
To make into a rosé. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.